Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
By the way, the Virginia Tech final was 89-62. 89-62. So clearly, there was a period of time listening to the game with John Lazor and Mike Burnup. You know, that Virginia Tech made a little bit of a run, tried to keep it close, and then Dayton kind of expanded. That's a pretty good Dayton team, top 25 team. I think they were 23rd, 22nd in the country. And they win 89-62. Now, that's the Maui Invitational. Virginia Tech will either play Kansas or BYU in the third place game tomorrow. If you can beat Kansas, right? And I know very little about college basketball. I mean, I'll admit, it's not my strength. But if you can beat Kansas, right? And you already beat Michigan State, even though you lost to Dayton and lost handily to Dayton, it's a pretty good week for Mike Young and Virginia Tech, right? I mean, new coach, new system, lost some players, not much expected, transition year. If you can do that, as long as you don't completely fall apart in conference play when that starts up, if you can beat Kansas, if you can, and you already beat Michigan State, pretty nice start to the year, right? Okay, so you got your doors blown off against Dayton. Gonna happen. You beat Michigan State and Kansas in the same week. That's a pretty good week. Pretty good business trip, right? Pretty good business trip. All right, so that's that. Again, the Wizards losing 86-69. Now, 10 seconds left to go in the third quarter. Listen, I don't know what you expect out of the Wizards. They're not a good defensive team to begin with. Against these teams on the road, like the Lakers, I think they play the Clippers as well on this trip. I know they play the Lakers. I know they play the Phoenix Suns. Good luck. I mean, good luck. If they give up 125 or less, that's probably going to be, you know, a pretty decent night's work, quite honestly. You want to say 120 or less? Okay. I'm not going to argue with you. They've given up 86 through three quarters, and it's almost an average of 30 per quarter. It's 29 per quarter, a little under 29 per quarter. So maybe you say, all right, if they keep them under $120, not bad, not bad. And I suppose you'd be right, especially going against that level of competition. All right, so here's one thing that I wanted to kind of get into. There's so much negativity about the Washington Redskins, and rightfully so. They earn it. They deserve it. Yes, they won on Sunday. I think we all understand that if they were playing a really good team, they would not have won. They barely beat the Lions. And I'm not saying that the Lions are a bad team. They're just not a good team, right? I mean, I can safely say they're not a good team. But I can also agree and think and said before the game, after the game, during the game, they're not a bad team, even though their record would indicate at 3-7-1 that they're not only not good, but that they're bad. They've lost twice as much as they've won. Okay, matter of semantics. I don't think they're that bad. They've had a lead in every game this year, and they've lost 6 out of 7 games by a touchdown or less. That doesn't scream bad. That screams not good enough. That doesn't scream bad. So the Redskins win a game on Sunday. I don't want to say they had no business winning, because they certainly had a chance to be much better than ultimately they wound up playing, right? How many open opportunities did Dwayne Haskins have? How many opportunities did they have to hit on a big play that would have changed the context, the script, the narrative of how we feel about Dwayne Haskins in one game, how we feel about the Redskins, how we feel about the future, right? Right now, everybody thinks, eh, and rightfully so. Understandable. You shouldn't think anything better than, eh. You know, you can see the potential, but potential only gets you so far. It's like, close, but no cigar. Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Whatever statement you want to use, right? They were close. They were close to scoring 30 points. They scored 19. They were close to scoring an offensive touchdown. They scored none. They've scored two offensive touchdowns, both in extensive garbage time, since the early third quarter of the October 13th game against the Miami Dolphins. It's now November 26th. And they're, of course, not going to play again until Sunday, which is what? December 1st? I guess Sunday would be December 1st. So from October 13th to December 1st, at least, they've scored two offensive touchdowns. Because the touchdown that they did score on Sunday was a special teams touchdown. Doesn't count. The two touchdowns on offense that they scored, one was Geis, 45-yard screen, with about 10 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter of a 34-3 game. And the other one was to Jeremy Sprinkle with like a 1:05 left from 1 yard out. Okay. I mean, theoretically, we have to count those, but essentially, the Redskins haven't scored an offensive touchdown that counted, that mattered, that had some effect on the game, on a game, since October 13th, which is just hideous. Yet, because I know the negativity is at an all-time high, and I understand that, and I contribute to that, because I understand that this is a young offense, that we should not expect perfection, we should not expect crisp play out of, we should not expect anything other than the typical ups and downs, the typical tantalizing ups and downs of a young football team, of a young offense. And if it was this way on defense, we would say, well, they're young on defense. And in some ways, guess what? This is exactly what we get on defense. You've got two young horses in Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne. Matt Ioannidis looks like an old man. He's not. He's in his fourth year. Fourth. He looks like he's 42. He's not. He's 25. He's going to be 26 in like a month and a half, January 11th. He looks like an old man. He's not. You've got Cole Holcomb, rookie inside linebacker, who looks like he's 12. Flying around the other day. You've got Montez Sweat. Even Sean Dion Hamilton is still young. Ryan Anderson, only in his third year. Landon Collins, right? Oh, Landon Collins, been around forever. This is his fifth year in the NFL. He's 26. Quentin Dunbar, only been in the NFL for 5 years, 15, 16, 17, 18, and now 19. What is he, 25? Monte Nicholson, young, and, well, you can fill in the rest. Norman doesn't count anymore. Fabian Moreau's in his third year. The Redskins are young on defense. When you're young, you're going to be inconsistent. You're going to make dumb mistakes. You're not going to do everything right. Even when you're older and wiser and smarter and more experienced, you're not going to do everything right. But you're generally going to make better decisions and generally be more consistent. The Redskins are young in a lot of key areas. They're old in some areas, obviously. Donald Penn, Ryan Kerrigan, Josh Norman. But they're young mostly on both offense and defense. So I ask you this, instead of beating you over the head with a hammer tonight, and we have 1 hour left to go after I get done with this spiel at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. What do you like about this football team moving forward? What do you like? I think you have to start with the youth on both sides of the football. I think the statistics, I don't know what they exactly are. I'd have to look them up. But like the average age of the team wasn't anything that special. I don't care about that. You know, Donald Penn being 36 is going to throw that out of whack. This is a pretty young team. Not young in every spot, but it's a pretty young team. Do you like that? Is that something to hold on to? Is that something to hang your hat on? That the best is yet to come? That it's only got to get better from here? 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Or is there another item that you feel good about going into this week, going into the final month of the season? 800-636-1067. We'll come back. We'll take your calls. If you're out there, love to hear from you on the Fan. I look and I say this offense is still pretty young. They're still very young in some spots, obviously. And the defense is as well. And I just went down the list. So when you have a bunch of young players, what you're going to get is a lot of unevenness. You're going to get some highlight moments. You're going to get some good moments. Then you're going to get some bad moments. And you're probably going to get more bad moments than you want. But hopefully, ideally, they grow together and they gel together. And you can somehow find a way to keep the core together. And somehow, some way, a franchise that has no luck in terms of health somehow gets enough luck. They're not going to get total luck, but enough luck to actually like have a chance of being a winning team. So that's where I start. I'm looking at the young talent on both sides of the football and thinking, all right, they have holes. There's no doubt about it. They're not close enough. There's plenty of problems, but at least you've got that. You tell me. Let's get to Wendell in Springfield, then we'll get to Sal and Seneca after that. What's up, Wendell?
Hey, Chris, what's up, man?
What's going on, pal?
Not much. I'm a season ticket holder, been pretty much a lifelong fan once I started rooting in sports for this team. And I literally sat the whole time on break and cannot honestly come up with something that excites me for next year about this team. But to focus on the talent portion, I do agree they have a nice young nucleus. I think the building, though, where Bruce kind of messed up, you kind of want to be young, in my opinion, at offensive line because they want to gel. And they're butt old at the starters for the old linemen on average. And that's the group you want to be gelling and coming together and really start clicking. And then I think you want to have on that offensive side the veteranness come from the wide receiver core, and they're butt young. And that is the, I think, what has, especially with the young quarterback. I think you really want some veterans at receiver. And if you were going to go young in a spot, I choose talent with young guys at the line so they can kind of get cohesive and we keep them under manageable deals. So And I saw them draft. They did draft two O-linemen, so, you know, I do see them trying there. But
right.
As far as the starting core, that's an old group.
Well, I mean, listen, I think what we have to look at is Donald Penn's not going to be here next year, right? So your starting left tackle is probably going to be Jaron Christian. And Eric Flowers seems like he has a chance to be here at left guard for at least a little bit of time. Chase Roullier, you know, is still relatively young, right? He's only, what, fourth year in the league, whatever it is. The real question for me is on the right side, because Sheriff seems to me like an old 27-year-old, you know, and we know Morgan Moses has had his struggles for more than just this year, right? So that's the real question for me is how do they improve that part of it? And also look at it from this respect, do they feel like Jaron Christian is the left tackle for the future, the guy that they're going to bank their hopes on? I don't know if you can do that. So I think ideally you need essentially a left tackle and you need arguably a right tackle, or you can say, well, you know, between Christian and Moses, we feel okay at right and backup tackle. We think we have enough there, so we're not going to, you know, do a mega money deal with Sheriff. So now we have to find a way to bring in another guard, because that's a possibility. I mean, they're probably going to franchise Sheriff for next year. I don't see them doing a long term deal. I could be wrong on that. It kind of depends on both sides. But your point is a fair one. It's an absolute fair one.
No, yeah, but your logic and reasoning makes sense. And then real quick, I'll touch on the defense side and let you go to the other call. I think that mix is good. I think the mix there is very good. And like you said, a lot of good young pieces. I think what they're missing there is the leadership aspect. I know they got Kerrigan. Kerrigan strikes me as a lead by example guy. He doesn't really strike me as more of a vocal leader. And I think that can actually be beneficial in the right way. They're more veteran presence of guys like, you know, Josh Norman, a guy who brought a baseball bat on the field before, and, you know, and guys who just can't look too at performance. So I think that might be the missing piece on that side. Maybe add a veteran, but I like their young pieces.
Good call, Wendell. As always, always good to hear from you, pal. Appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. All right.
You too.
There you go. Wendell in Springfield, always one of our best callers. Appreciate him weighing in. All right, let's take a quick timeout, right, Darius? Let's take a quick timeout. We'll get to Sal. We'll get to Seneca on the other side. Guys, hang in there. I'm coming right at you. Don't go anywhere. Sal, Seneca, up next on The Fan. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Tuesday night heading towards a Wednesday morning. I'll be back with you at 6:30 right around from Capital One Arena on Wednesday evening before Brett Connolly and the Florida Panthers take to the ice against the Washington Capitals. Cono's first game back here as a member of the Panthers after, of course, helping the Capitals win a Stanley Cup. We will hear from Todd Reirden before midnight as we do a little Caps in the back half an hour. But right now we're asking something to feel good about, something to feel positive about for the Washington Redskins. Let's get to Sal in Arlington, then we'll get to Seneca after that. What's up, Sal? How are you?
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
What's up, Sal? Thanks for the call.
Now, I think you had to stay till 12:30 tonight since they held you over for the basketball game.
You know what? I love the idea. I like where your head's at. No. I still have hours of work to do when I get back home. So
I have that. Well, you know, it's good to have you on the air. I wish they had you on a regular show.
But I appreciate it.
Maybe someday there, guy. I was going to comment. I don't know if it's germane to what you're asking, but it seems to me that the Redskins teams have been lacking chemistry for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost as if they're just a bunch of guys running around. They play for a season, and then that's it. And I was going to ask you what you thought about that. Do you think that's something that's important?
You sure?
And that,
I mean, I think it's especially important on the offensive line, and they tried to build that chemistry, and then with their arrogance and with their nonchalant behavior or disregard of Trent Williams' concerns, that blew apart. You know, I mean, you're never going to be able to have five guys in today's day and age all together. I mean, if you look at, you know, what New England has been going through this year, if you look at the Rams, how good their offensive line was the last couple of years, how poor it is this year, right? It's really hard to do. The Cowboys have been able to do it, but that bill is coming due, right? They keep, you know, spending a ton of money, and ultimately players still fall short of expectation and units and groups. But you try and build that chemistry. And I tell you where the Redskins have it. They have it on the defensive line. They may not have it on the offensive line anymore. They have it on the defensive line, and they did try and build that. Now, I would just add more to this, Sal. What you hope, why all the young players that I mentioned on offense and defense, is that you build that chemistry, that you build together, that you build that bond together. That's what you're hoping for.
Where does that come from, though, do you think? Does it come from Allen's level on down, or is it something generated by the actual players and coaches?
Where does the chemistry have to come from, or where does the plan come from?
Where does it start from? Is it? I understand with these guys.
I think it starts at the scouting process. I think Kyle Smith and his college scouting crew, I think mm-hmm. what they try and do is they get to know these players inside and out, every little part of their personality, every little part of their being. And you can't know everything, right? There's only so much information you can have. But the road scouts are constantly trying to turn over every little, you know, turn. And, you know, for the most part, they have a bunch of pretty good guys, right? They're a couple of rotten eggs and, you know, a couple of guys that do stupid things and whatever. But for the most part, that's where it starts from. And that's also why they've focused in on Alabama guys, and now why they're focusing in on Ohio State guys, and they could easily add a Chase Young to that mix. They want big school, big game, big moment guys who also happen to be, at least in their opinion, for the most part, hardworking, smart football players that want football badly. Now, I don't know where Dwayne Haskins is on that scale. He seems to want it badly at times, and then there's other things that he does that kind of drive you crazy. But we also know that wasn't necessarily a scouting staff pick. That was more of a Dan Snyder, we have to change the franchise pick. So you see, that's where I think it starts from, and then you try and build that chemistry and that cohesion from there.
Well, maybe do you think they'll keep the current coach, or maybe go for someone like the Ravens offensive coordinator?
That name is going to get a lot of run. Greg Roman is a excellent football coach. I think he's clearly at his best when he has somebody like Colin Kaepernick back in San Francisco, like Lamar Jackson here, where he can accentuate the read option zone and the run print. That, to me, even though I think Dwayne Haskins is much more mobile than people give him credit for, and we've seen that at times, that to me is not what Dwayne Haskins does best. So I would probably look for somebody that tries to mirror what Dwayne Haskins does well, which is the when he's accurate, the intermediate to deep passing game because of his rocket arm. Sal, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much. Got to let you run. Let's get to Seneca in D.C. on the fan. Hey, Seneca, how are you?
Rooster!
What's up, Seneca?
Greg, how's it going?
What's going on, man?
Man, I agree with Wendell from earlier. He said it is kind of hard to think of something exciting. And I'm excited about Gerald Green, at least, you know, coaching in the NFC and the Pro Bowl. So we're going to have somebody showing effort from the Redskins side, finally. you know, I'm excited about our kick returns. We hadn't had one since 2015.
Right, right.
You know. But, yeah, I mean, I don't like being excited about Josh Norman being benched. You know, I rooted for him for as long as I could, and it just people make fun of me for it. They say he's not going nowhere. He's not going to improve. And I went to training camp, Rooster. I went to the training camp over the summer. I saw Jimmy Moreland. I said, "Have a good season, Jimmy." And he looked at me like a ghost had just stepped right in front of him. And I don't know if I jinxed him. I don't know if he knew that the season was going to be like this. But I was really confused by his reaction.
That's interesting.
No thank you.
Usually those young guys, and he's got a little bit of swagger to him. You know, you don't play at James Madison and have the kind of production that he. It's interesting. Maybe he was just tired. Who knows? You never want to purely judge a book by its front cover. But you know, Moreland, I thought was pretty good the other day. I mean, he made a big tackle on third down. He helped chase down Jeff Driscoll from behind and almost stripped him, which led to the sack for no yardage by Sean Dion Hamilton. But, I thought Moreland was more comfortable on Sunday than I've seen him probably all year.
Totally. I agree. I think it is going to be some gelling. We are still a young team on defense and offense. I think it's just going to be the cohesiveness that has to develop. I want to see some reasons for more youthful exuberance, you know, maybe not so much technology wise, but
right.
Yeah. You know, I like to see them celebrate and I like to see them. And plus we do play Dallas again. The possibilities there. Who knows? Rooster, I'm crazy as you, man. And you don't get enough credit. You are definitely a vessel, you know, of this station. And I enjoy listening to you every time you're on.
My man, Seneca, you keep calling back, man. I like you. Happy Thanksgiving.
I will too.
Happy Thanksgiving, pal. I appreciate the phone call and the good words.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Same.
And I was just thinking, you know, if you're around people you hate for Thanksgiving, then that's exactly what, you know, that's exactly how it started. But the love grew, so. Here we are.
make sure you spread the love, baby, and eat good. That's all I know. Thank you, pal. Appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. All right. When we come back, we'll continue to knock down your calls. You want to talk a little Redskins? We can get into the Capitals. Big game on tap tomorrow night against the very, very, very good, tough, talented Florida Panther team. Plus, we'll hear from Todd Reardon, too, by the time we exit stage left on the Fan. We're going to have to squeeze in Todd Reardon and Bernie in Rockville somehow here. And more commercials. So we bring on my right-hand man, my man of information, who told me during the commercial break, which like lasted about 9 minutes, that Duke just went down the Dukies biting the dust, Bernie.
At Cameron Indoor.
How about that? To Stephen A. F. Austin.
Austin Lumberjacks.
Well, and we're not talking about Stone Cold Stephen F. Austin, right?
No, but I'm seeing Stone Cold LeVar Arrington on WWE's FS1 show now cutting a promo on Samoa Joe.
Oh, good
so
Lord.
Anything can happen in the world of sports and entertainment.
You don't miss a thing.
But speaking of not missing a thing, I want to get this in before we start talking some puck. You know, Vic could learn how to use his blocking center a little better. When you have an 800-pound guy coming after you, move over to the opposite side so you let your receiver do a double move and leave J.P. Finley in the dust and catch one over the middle like Chris Russell could have done if he had more time to run his route.
I agree. Here's the thing. I think you've only seen one of the clips, right? Or have they put up more since earlier?
Well, I saw the clip, which I saw the one where Landfill's showing his acumen trying to rush the pass from three different angles, and then you see the play.
Right. Okay. Well, there were three different plays that we ran, and I got past J.P. Finley on two of them. The third one, the one you've seen, that was more of like a hot read adjustment, Burn. And it just didn't go well. JP made a nice play. I beat him on the first two.
Yeah, JP made a great play on it, but, I mean, your quarterback's going to help you out by reading where a guy like Mullins isn't going to be able to stop and get that momentum going another way, and Brock had him going one way.
It's a good point. Whatever. That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right, so hockey, Caps, Panthers.
Yes, yes.
The Panthers are really good.
Well, you got Coach Q behind the bench, which definitely makes that a bigger addition. Plus Sergei Bobrovsky, although I saw today, I think they've given up 89 goals, which I had to do a double take on.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you got Coach Q down there. You got a guy like Aaron Ekblad anchoring your defense. You got Bobrovsky, you paid $8 million. You got $800 million a year to play goal for you. You have all these young guys on offense, and you give them goals left and right. But, of course, they're like the master of the four-goal comeback this year in the NHL. I think they've done it twice already.
They did it last week. I think they were down 4-0, right? And the Panthers and the Caps played a pretty wild game down in Sunrise earlier. And if memory serves me correct, I want to say the Panthers won like 3 out of 4 over Washington last year. They gave them all sorts of fits.
2 out of 3, yeah.
Oh, 2 out of 3. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting team. Florida's always given us fits, especially down there in Sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
The dichotomy with that team when they're playing under Bob Bugner and some of the more defensive coaches. They had Craig Ramsey down there for a stretch as their assistant way back in the day, and he always had a way of stifling Boudreaux's teams, which very few teams could actually do with that stretch. But I was looking at it. If you had the last year's rosters, Chris, Caps already had 6 10 goal scorers, if you include Cano and Berkey, both over 10 for their new teams.
Hmm. How about that? I mean, I knew
Connolly. That's a lot of talent on that roster.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a, you know, I asked Brian McClellan this morning, you know, and obviously they had a lot of changeover, and you just mentioned two of the guys. They are, you know, Bernie, they might not be as offensive friendly on those bottom two lines, but they're tougher. They're more physical, and I think they're grittier. And that's kind of like been my theme, and he brought up Gudas, and I didn't even bring him up, but I was kind of thinking along those lines. I think that team felt they were missing an edge last April and wanted to be better on the penalty kill, speedier in transition, and more physical.
Well, you also had a 65% Brooks Orr pick that last half
Correct.
Of the season. I
Correct.
Didn't think he came back well at all after he was out that extended period of time. And that was the time where the Caps were rolling through November and December, but it was when Christian Juice went down right there before that New Year's Eve game with Nashville, and they brought Brooks Orpik back is when they hit their little swoon going from there to the All-Star
mm-hmm.
break. That's definitely something that plus you had a first-year NHL assistant in Reed Cashman trying to figure out A plus B equals D with these defensive pairs and trying to put guys that weren't used to playing in positions that they were playing in, like Nick Jensen and Carlson, trying to play on the opposite wings. It definitely made for a perfect storm, no pun intended, when those bunch of jerks took care of business at home in their games and then found a way to get a lucky bounce in Game 7.
My man, always good to hear from you. Thank you, as always, for all the great information. Happy Thanksgiving, and I will talk to you. You know I'll talk to you soon. I'm on Thursday and
Absolutely.
Friday, so, you know, I mean, just we'll talk then, okay?
Absolutely, Chris, and happy Thanksgiving to you and to Double D, Darius Dameron, doing his thing as only he can.
He's been on the phone with somebody for a long time. I have no idea who he's talking to.
I was talking his ear off for about 5 minutes, and that's why he had to go do the commercial. So I might have been partially to blame for the 9-minute commercial break.
He's too nice of a guy. He's too nice of a guy. He should hang up on some clown, whoever it is.
He'd hang up on me, and then we wouldn't have this nice conversation, Chris. So always great talking to you.
Thanks,
hopefully
pal.
We can get a 2.9 and get everything back on track. So.
Sounds good. My man, Bernie and Rockville, as always, good to hear from you. We'll take a final timeout on The Fan. All right, indeed. Welcome back. Yep, we're still live. Just wrapping up the show. We're going to take you for another couple of moments, and then we'll turn you over to CBS Sports Radio for Rel on the Bench. I know Scotty's out this week. Not sure who's filling in tonight, but that'll be coming your way. Now, we were going to play Caps head coach Todd Reirden because I was with the Caps all morning and early afternoon with Brian McClellan and Todd Reirden. However, because of Commercial Palooza. We are not going to have time for that. But, however, this is what I can tell you. Coming up at 7 a.m. with the Junks on 106.7 TheFanRadio.com, The Fan 910 in Richmond, and NBC Sports Washington, Todd Reirden will be on live. So you'll hear from Todd Reirden live, 7 a.m., right here on The Fan with the Junks in advance of them meeting with Florida. And then tomorrow night, when I get back on, assuming that we have enough time, which we're always seem pressed for time, because some things have to line up and happen. First, on the Steam Fitters UA Local 602 Caps pregame show that I host from Capital One Arena, we will play a little snippet, a little sniblet, as Fred Smoot used to say, of that Todd Reirden presser from today, because I thought he had some really interesting things to say about Brett Connolly, who makes his return to Capital One Arena. Looking forward to seeing Cono on the ice, not scoring, because he's been doing plenty of that, but against the Capitals, and you know what that means. There'll be a nice tribute to him right around the 13-and-a-half-minute mark, 14-minute mark, somewhere around that particular time. So looking forward to seeing that, and there'll be a rousing standing ovation for one of the good guys, Brett Connolly, who was always good to the media, and that is important for me. And he was a damn good player, and yeah, he's just a good glue guy who has taken his career to another level, and good for him. Happy for that. So again, Todd Reirden with the Junks, 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, right here on The Fan, or this morning, I guess, in 1 minute and 30 seconds. 7 a.m. for Reirden on the Caps and the Panthers. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Thanks to everybody who called and listened and who was with us, who made this last hour and change easy, including my man Darius on the other side of the glass, juggling 14 different things, my man Bernie in Rockville, all the callers, great job. You guys are so kind. Appreciate it very much. Again, I'll be with you right around 6:30 tomorrow for a short little extra Steam Fitters UA Local 602 pregame show before the Caps and the Panthers. If I don't talk to you before then, happy Thanksgiving. Oh, I'll be on Thursday morning as well. Don't forget about me. 9 to noon, I think, right here on The Fan. So your boy's got to work on Thanksgiving. That means he can't be stuffing his turkey. I'm going to eat a lot of turkey, I can tell you that much. Pharrell on the Bench coming up next. CBS Sports Radio. Don't forget to check me out, si.com/NFL/Redskins, Locked On Redskins podcast, and all that good stuff. Warpath Magazine as well. Thanks to Darius. Good night from the nation's capital.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.